Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, you're a wordsmith. How do you spell hardcore?
Only one way, Jim. Lowercase H-A-R, capital D-C, lowercase O-R-E.
That's very nice.
Thank you, sir.
All right, okay. We got the video going.
Now you can undress.
Okay, ready? Here we go. The great unveiling.
Here we go. Under showing off the tattoo.
There it is.
That is a sweet tattoo, man.
It
really is.
It's the, I think it's either the second or third edition cover of Flex Your Head.
Yep, there you go.
The seminal Discord DC hardcore compilation.
Okay, so this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us is
Hunter Bennett.
Hunter Bennett. And I want to get that out of the way because I want to talk, Hunter. So you grew up in Philadelphia or the Philadelphia area.
I did.
And then when did you come to DC area?
Well, I chose what college to attend because I liked the music from DC the most, which probably explains why I failed out shortly thereafter. But because I loved hardcore so much, I moved down here in the fall of 1988 to attend George Washington University. And so the bands we're going to talk about today, by and large, well, we're going to talk about two of sort of my absolute favorites that predated my my move to DC. But then the last three we're going to talk about are the bands that were going strong while I was here and were my favorites and are the ones that I would say I saw each of them at least 10 times and maybe as many as 20.
The thing I find interesting about the DC scene is that it's just so associated with hardcore. Like, it's hardcore, and then, like, I mean, aside from Go-Go, which is kind of a different thing, although they did sort of cross-pollinate, but, what I'm saying is, in terms of rock, what we think of as rock music, it was, like, sort of hardcore, and that was it. There really wasn't, like, much of any other rock scene, right?
Not a whole lot. There was some, but definitely was definitely a dominant, you know, thing that happened. And I think between Bad Brains and Minor Threat, they sort of set a template for a lot of bands on the East Coast and a lot of scenes elsewhere. I mean, I think people in Boston really picked up on Straight Edge and took that to some extremes, and they just was amazingly influential, and Discord the label as well.
Yeah, yeah, and in the Midwest too. Like on day two, I believe we talked about the Necros a bit, and all those bands in Detroit. I mean, Discord influenced them as well. And yeah, I think in the 80s, certainly, I think that was pretty much all that was going on.
Yeah.
In the 90s, there was a little bit of, like, you know, the Slumberland thing came around.
That's
and
right.
stuff, but none of that was really on my radar. It was all hardcore all the time. And, you know, as I mentioned, I think maybe yesterday or the day before, in the early 80s, I think Southern California was better than D.C.
Yep.
But when D.C. hit its stride in like 85, you know, late 84 to about 1989, let's say, I don't think there was anything better. I mean, I think it was just fantastic, and it was really diverse. And the other amazing thing about DC was bands would break up. A lot of times they break up before you even got their record.
That's right.
Like, it wasn't even out yet. And then before you knew it, they'd be in another band.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Grey Matter sort of combine, and they pick up Jeff Nelson on drums, and all of a sudden they're three.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, or like Embrace break up, but then out of the ashes of that comes Ignition.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the weirdest being Rites of Spring break up, and then they get back together, but they're calling themselves Happy Go Licky.
Yeah, but the same lineup.
Yeah.
Playing totally different music. Yeah.
Yeah. So so anyway, I'm really excited for this, and I think what we should start with is I think probably one of my two favorite records on Discord is probably the Embrace record, which I think officially came out on Discord in the fall of 87, but I first heard it, we got like a 20th generation dub of the Embrace demo up in Philadelphia. Like, first I heard the song we're about to hear, like, coming in on WKDU, which was Drexel's radio station. And it was always really staticky when I listened in my house. And like, I would fall asleep with my arm on the antenna, which would make the signal come in a little better.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard this song, which is called No More Pain, I was just blown away. It's got pretty much everything I love about punk rock.
No more lying down. We've
So that was Embrace with No More Pain. That was recorded in the fall of 1985. And Embrace were, that's Ian MacKaye on vocals, obviously. That is post Minor Threat, but pre Fugazi, yep. Ian MacKaye. And the drummer is Ivar Hansen, the bass player is Chris Bald, and the guitar player is Michael Hampton, who some of you may be familiar with, as they were all in a band called The Faith, but the singer of The Faith was Alec MacKaye, Ian MacKaye's younger brother. Yep. So essentially they swapped out MacKaye's and started a new band. But I mean, it just sounds so different than any sort of like DC hardcore I had heard to that point. And what I love about it, I interviewed Michael Hampton, the guitar player, a few years ago, and he was like, yeah, that was basically me and Chris, the bass player, just kind of soloing the whole time.
Oh, wow.
And it was. It's like, you know, there's like not a chord or a root note to be heard on most of that record, but still somehow it works. And then like over top of it, you've got, I mean, Ian MacKaye singing on that, I think it's my favorite sort of vocal thing that I've ever heard him do, what he does on the Embrace record.
Totally different from Minor Threat, as Hunter said, and that he was actually emoting and singing. And I missed this too. You know, I don't know how long this band was together. It wasn't very long. And, you know, they played a here and there, I guess, when they were together. But yeah, as
I think
Hunter
like
said,
10 shows or something like that.
As Hunter said, this band was long gone before the record even came out. But it's one of those things on Discord where you listen to it, and if you had listened to Minor Threat or some of the other Discord records, you got it. Because after you listened to it for a while, you got the power and you got the intensity. This one was so much more slippery and kind of ethereal. Like, you had to listen to it a lot, you know, to really figure out what it was. And now that I hear Michael Hampton say that they were kind of soloing, you know. And the thing, you know, just like you were talking about kind of at the open, it brings to mind another band from DC called One Last Wish that didn't put anything out till they were, you know, broken up and never really officially, I guess, put anything out while they were together. But same kind of slippery, ephemeral harmonics being played maybe on the bass and some, kind of some cool sounds. But a lot of these guys loved such a wide variety of music, which I think is something that a lot of people don't really realize. I mean, they were big record collectors and big fans of music, and you can kind of start to hear it come out and Embrace for sure. And I don't know, Michael Hampton's one of the best guitar players I've ever seen. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, he is a guy who likes a really wide variety of music.
Yeah.
The sort of, you know, the thing that's become sort of popular in recent years is to say, oh, Embrace, they were just ripping off, or not ripping off, but were heavily influenced by this band called Empire, right, which was sort of a post-Generation X spinoff band that put out one record that's, you know, it's not bad. It sounds kind of like Embrace.
Right.
So when I was interviewing Michael, I also said, hey, were you really that heavily influenced by Empire? And he was like, no.
Right.
He's like, I really like Generation X. So I was like influenced by Durwood that way.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, he's like, I've listened to that record a handful of times.
Yeah, right.
One other interesting note while we're on the subject of Embrace and the very few shows they played. One of those shows was at the Chevy Chase Community Center, which is if you were to walk through my window and then walk through that house and then walk through a couple more houses, you would walk into the Chevy Chase Community Center.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's when you live in the hardcore historic district, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that going on.
Yeah, and you know, we'll probably hear a little more about Chris Bald too later on, but he was quite an enigmatic figure in the DC scene.
Yeah, yeah, and again, he really did some fascinating stuff on bass and guitar, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. I see somebody read their show notes.
Yes, I did. And you know, I think the other thing too to say about Embrace is how radically different it was from Minor Threat. I think a lot of people were very, very surprised that Ian would do this kind of music and sing in the way he sang, even though the lyrics were very much on message for him. It was very, very radical, and it took me a long time to kind of understand how great it was, but it was a pretty hard left turn for that time.
Yeah, so next we are going to listen to, speaking of Michael Hampton, who is also one of my favorite guitar players, we are going to listen to a band called The Snakes. And the Snakes are Michael Hampton and Simon Jacobson. And those guys grew up next to each other in Georgetown. They played together at the playground when they were five, and they sort of had a band that evolved out of that. And that band coexisted with all their, you know, those guys were in SOA together, which was Henry Rollins' first band. Then Michael was in The Faith, and Michael was in Embrace, and Michael was in Manifesto. He was in One Last Wish. He was in a ton of bands, but while he was doing all those, he was also doing The Snakes with his friend Simon, and it was them writing goofy songs and making each other laugh. Yeah. And I think I love all the Snake stuff. I actually wrote the, I'll pat myself on the back here, the definitive article on the Snakes for Ugly Things magazine.
Oh, and did you?
Yeah, you can, there's a online sidebar, which where those two just talk about what all the songs are about.
Oh,
and
really?
It's got links to the songs, so you can check it out. And oh, they're sweet. Both really hilarious and really smart. All so right. I would recommend checking it out.
I'll definitely do that.
But I think this next song, Happy, which is the title track of their second record, is, I think, the Snakes' finest moment. All right, so that was The Snakes. That was recorded, I think, in 1985 or 1986, but didn't come out till the early 90s. Mm-hmm. That actually, they recorded that in the session right before Rites of Spring recorded, I can't remember if it's the album or the 7-inch, but basically The Snakes left everything plugged in and Rites of Spring, and Guy Picciotto and Brendan Caney from Rites of Spring were sort of unofficial members of The Snakes.
Yeah.
They filled out the band in the one live performance they did. And so Rites of Spring just, you know, picked up the instruments and played. And so when I was talking to Michael, he said, so it helps to think of those two records as like of a piece. And the best thing is they sound nothing like each other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But I mean, that's got, it's got a great sort of rollicking bass line.
Oh,
it's
got
a really cool icy keyboard.
Yeah.
It's like really poppy and really well played. And those guys both know a ton about music. Like, you know, they love the Zombies and the Beatles and all that. And that really comes through. And I think another thing I love about the Snakes records is Discord gets sort of panned for being humorless, or not panned,
totally.
But they have a rap for being humorless.
Yep.
Both Snakes records, the first one's called I Won't Love You Till You're More Like Me, and the second one is Happy. And Jeff Nelson sort of did it as a half release between Discord and Adult Swim, his other label. And you can get the CD, I think, for like $8, and I can't recommend it enough.
Oh, wow.
It's great.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I need to get this.
Yeah. And it threw me. I'll tell you, when I started going through the Discord stuff, I was like, what is this? I don't understand this. Is it supposed to be funny? Is it, you know, what is going on? And I do have, I'll have to take a picture and send it or post it. The first album, I Won't Love You Till You're More Like Me, is autographed by Michael Hampton. I bought it somewhere at a used record store, but it's got a very hilarious salutation. It says to somebody, I can't remember all of it. It says, so warm, so soft, something else, and it's signed by Michael Hampton. It's like really, really great. And to Hunter's point, if you seek out this one-off project called The Brief Weeds, it's got some in common with what the Snakes did too, of that sort of Zombies. I think that's a great reference, pop kind of stuff. Yeah. Really cool. I'm so glad we're digging into this part of it. It's really excellent.
So these are the kinds of bands that made me move here.
Okay.
And, you know, I had visions of, I would come down and within a month be playing in a band with like Ian MacKaye and Chris Bald and Michael Hampton, because it all seemed so possible, because again they were forming new bands every month, and like all those records were great. Like you go through a Discord catalog from the mid 80s, like there is not a bad record that they put out for like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know that any of them are bad. I sort of lost interest in the 90s a little bit, but man, they were on a hot streak of just putting out records that I loved. And so that's why I moved here. my parents, if my parents are listening, I'm sorry. Now that I have children that seem to want to go to college or purport to want to go to college, I'm like, oh God, I was such an idiot.
Your parents are like, that GW tuition bill.
Yeah. I think they're still paying it off.
To fund his music habit, right?
So next we are going to hear a band called Ignition, which Ignition is in the grand tradition of shuffling lineups. Now we have Alec Mackay on vocals. Mm-hmm. Chris Bald has moved from bass to guitar. Chris Thompson, who would go on to sing for Circus Lupus and a bunch of other bands. Yeah. In fact, didn't your band open for Circus Lupus at DC Space?
Yeah, we played with Circus Lupus at DC Space. We did, and we were smart enough to go first, so everyone did not leave after Circus Lupus played.
Yeah, and Dante Ferrando, the proprietor of the Black Cat, was the drummer.
That's right.
So anyway, this is a song called Previous that is from Ignition's first full-length record, which I think came out my freshman year of college, but I'm not 100% sure. Chris Bald is one of the most unorthodox guitar players I've ever seen, but man, he did some cool stuff.
Really
that
did.
Whole, when he's doing the harmonic thing, and he did this thing, I remember so vividly seeing him do it for the first time at the 930 Club, or the first time I noticed it, where he hits a harmonic and then bends the string above the nut, which gives it that really cool sound.
Amazing.
And then, I mean, what I loved about them was they could be the best band in the world or the worst. And you never knew what you were going to get. Like, sometimes they were transcendent. They were so good. And other times, like one time I saw him and Chris didn't bring a guitar strap. And you can sort of imagine how a set played by a guitar player without a guitar strap will go. They also seemed to have themes. Like, one time they were all wearing gangster suits. Mm. Another time they were all in dresses. One time Chris was naked.
I heard about that. Yeah. And, you know, for folks like Hunter and I, Jim, who lived around here at that time, the great thing about Ignition was they played all the time.
It's all right.
I mean, they just were, it was like Wednesday night, what's going on? I don't want to be home. Oh, Ignition's playing at the Hung Jury Pub or some weird, you know, place that wasn't a thing. And they would just play everywhere all the time, which was great. And I remember going to their 100th show. I believe it was at the 930 Club.
Yeah, with the free Flexi.
Yes, I got the Flexi disc still at home, which was really cool. They gave away everyone a commemorative Flexi disc when you walked in the door. So that's the kind of cool stuff they would do. But they were constantly playing. I mean, I don't know how long they were together, but they racked up 100 shows pretty fast.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It was kind of amazing.
And unlike a lot of those Discord bands from that era, they toured.
They did.
I mean, yeah. I saw them in Philadelphia. I saw them. They played in Delaware, though. I think that show got canceled due to skinhead violence, which was a problem at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But man, I mean, yeah, like Patrick said, you could see them. I must have seen them over 20 times.
Yeah, they were constantly playing, and they were on great bills, too. You were going to see a band, and there they were. You know, they were playing. It was awesome.
Yeah, and it was always interesting.
Yeah.
A friend of mine says he saw them at DC Space, and Alec had a really long microphone cable and went out around and was singing out on the street, staring in through the big glass window of the DC Space. I wasn't there, so I'm not 100% sure it happened, but I could totally see it.
I could see it. Yeah.
All right, so let me flip. Oh, my God. We are moving on to the last page of my 18 pages of show notes.
This is a really interesting band.
And now we go to Kingface with Dirty Wings. We'll be right back. So that was King Face, or as I think of them, sort of DC's answer to Van Halen. Yeah. And, you know, I'd say King Face might be the only band that I've seen more than I saw Ignition. Mm. And they, I mean, God, they were so cool. You had like Mark Sullivan, the singer, had dreadlocks, and he was like always shirtless and sort of shaking his dreadlocks back and forth. Andy Rappaport, the bass player, he was always shirtless too. He was like, he had kind of a cool like Hanoi Rocks thing going. Pat Bopst, the guitar player, who I think now goes by Patrick Bopst.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. anyway, he was a great, I mean, I don't think that dude liked punk rock at all. Yeah. I think he kind of was into hard rock, and he would bust out these great hard rock riffs. And then the drummer, Larry Colbert, AKA or Colbert, depending on your pronunciation, he was maybe the greatest drummer I've ever seen. I mean, that dude just was the beat, and he had this kit. He had these roto toms, and he used to like pound the hell out of them.
Right.
And he was just so like, you know, drumming is one of those things where everybody can sound really good, and there are plenty of like good, competent drummers. But when you see someone who's amazing, you were like, that dude's amazing.
Right.
And that's what Larry was. And this song is from a Discord compilation, State of the Union, that came out my freshman year of college. I think probably early 89 it came out. And you know, it's King Face are great. Like, if their records are hard to find, but if you find them, pick them up. And you know, the funny thing is they reunited for some of those Salad Days shows a few years ago. They were still out there, and they were still doing their thing. Like, Andy Rappaport's got gray hair, but man, he still looked totally like a cool, like punk rock dude. Mark Sullivan shaking his dreadlocks. Mark, like us all, he's not quite rail thin anymore. And maybe, you know, he wore a t-shirt while he was dancing.
There
around.
You go.
But it was still great. Man, it was great.
Such a cool band. I'm really glad we played them. They were just another example of kind of that there was a variety, you know, as Hunter said, after that sort of first wave of Discord broke, you know, there were all kinds of really cool things happening. I mean, you also had bands like Soulside, Fire Party, which was an all-girl band, female band that was a really cool, interesting band that had made some amazing records. King Face and, you know, Beefeater and all these bands, you know, that were out there that were kind of doing these really amazing things at that time.
Yeah, and I don't think King Face ever officially released one of their own records on Discord.
No, I think they did.
I think they self-released their first record maybe, and then like Concurrent or one of those like Dutch labels might have done the second one.
Right.
But yeah, they, you know, I think everybody always thought of them as a Discord band.
Totally.
And they were, for all intents and purposes. Yeah. Like, Mark's brother, Bobby, was the singer in Soulside.
Right. Cynthia Connolly did the artwork, I know, on the King Face album, the first one, and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll always be Discord to me.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So we are going to close this out with Shudder to Think,
who
were the last of the bands that, I mean, I must have seen them 20 times.
They played all the time. Like, yep.
And they were so good.
Yeah,
they were so different than what anybody else was doing. So we're going to hear a song called Rag, which this came out on a record called Ten Spot, which Discord put out in 1990. Mm-hmm. But again, my sophomore year of college, we had a you know, 18th generation dub of the whole record.
Yeah.
And used to listen to it nonstop.
Right.
And it's one of those things. And one of the things I love about music is whenever I hear those songs, I'm instantly transported back to like walking to my friend's basement apartment at 22nd and M, where we would just listen to this nonstop. Yeah. I've been playing music the better part of like 35 years, and I don't know how you even come up with something like that. It's everything is so, just works so perfectly. Like, it's a weird bass line. It's the guitar leads are just tearing away. Mike Russell's drumming is perfect, and Craig Wedren's voice, like, how he came up with that as a vocal style and had enough confidence to actually do it. And, you know, a lot of times you'd read reviews of Shudder to Think Records and people wouldn't get it at all. They'd be like, this is awful. The vocals drive me crazy. I mean, that is just, it's for lack of a better word, magnificent. It's just amazing.
So funny you said that, because in my fanzine that I referenced earlier in the week, I wrote a review of their first album, which was called Curses, Spells, Voodoo, and Mooses. And it was not very complimentary. And later I was passing out my fanzine, and Craig actually came up to me at a show and said, did you write that review of, and I said, no, that was another guy. I didn't write that.
Have you met the Bish?
Yeah, exactly. Here's my friend, Andy's over here. I don't know where you don't want to mess with him, but it was, you know, I think he had a couple things to say about it, but and this is a band that later went on to sign to Epic, but they were very, very different from a lot of the bands that were around, which is another really cool thing. It's another great example. This has been a very excellent choice here today of these songs, Hunter. And another band I got reminded of listening to this is called Swizz, that was around, that kind of played some stuff that was kind of similar but a little faster and had a really interesting kind of sound too. But yeah, this is a band, you know, which gained kind of a cult following. But yeah, they kind of stayed with that sound and continued to work on it.
Yeah, and they actually, the sort of epic incarnation of Shudder to Think was markedly different than the one that we just heard.
Yeah.
Chris Matthews went to graduate school and is now a professor at Montclair State University with my friend Julian. So he left the band, and Mike Russell stayed in D.C. And then who joined? So Nathan Larson, the bass player of Swizz, played guitar. Nathan Larson, I think, went on and married Nina Person from the Cardigans.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting bit of trivia.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And the drummer was Adam Wade, who had played in Jawbox
and
then started playing in Shudder to Think. Though I think like Kevin March from Guided by Voices was playing in Shudder to Think for a while. Mm. So the New York incarnation, I admit, I didn't follow that closely.
Right.
I suspect I would really like those records, but by the time I was in my 20s, I was no longer the uncynical person that loved that TSOL record.
Right.
I was like, well, if it ain't got Chris Matthews and Mike Russell, I don't want to hear
it. It's not on Discord, forget it.
Yeah, and it's not on Discord, and if it's on Epic, which didn't even have any good rock bands, I don't want to hear it. But I'm sure I would love it now, because again, like, Craig Wedren's one of those dudes who's just incredibly talented.
Yeah, absolutely amazing singer. And, you know, kind of, you can probably surmise this from what we've been talking about, but during that period, you know, 86, 85, 86 to 90, anything that came out on Discord, you were like, I got to get this because I don't know what it would sound like. Many times you had seen the band, but like the case of Fugazi, for example, having seen them play a lot of times live before their record came out, you were very surprised how cool the record actually came out based on their live shows. And that was a lot of the things with this. You'd be like, look at all these sonic things they did that were so cool in the studio, and they actually made it sound really good, you know, whether they went into Inner Ear or did it somewhere else. So
and that's great that you mentioned Inner Ear, which I'd sort of forgotten to mention. Mm-hmm. You know, most of these records were recorded at Inner Ear Studios with one guy, Don Zantara, sort of engineering at the least and usually producing as well. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that DC is so well documented is that, you know, there was a studio where a guy was patient enough to be willing to work with a bunch of hardcore punk bands. Whereas I think, you know, if you grew up somewhere outside of DC, it was probably really intimidating to go into a studio and they'd probably treat you like, these guys don't even know how to play.
Right.
So, you know, I think Don, fortunately, I think Don gets a fair amount of credit, but he definitely deserves a lot of credit for this stuff. Cause it's all, you know, even the stuff that doesn't sound like necessarily as professional as some other stuff, it's got a real sort of sound and a vibe to it. And that's him. And he is an incredibly nice, encouraging person. Like, when you go in there, he's never anything but enthusiastic.
Right. He's a shepherd. He really was for a lot of this music. Yeah. And an amazing dude. And gosh, I think we're kind of scratching the surface too when the memories start flooding back of all these, you know, different kind of bands that were around then. It was a pretty cool time to be in this city and listening to music. It really was.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and yeah, I mean, and you had the 9:30 Club, you had DC Space, you had the Barbecue Iguana.
Yep.
Like 15 Minutes was up and running briefly.
Yeah.
And like, you know, then the, I mean, it just, it really was a great place to be. And DC has obviously come a long way in terms of, it's a, you know, it, DC had a lot of problems in the late 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, there was something sort of special about the place that, you know, I think with skyrocketing rents and all of that, it would be tough to recreate.
Right. Totally.
It was definitely a pretty rough place at night, and it was kind of cool to go down there and just kind of huddle with that circle of friends. I mean, you walked really fast between DC Space and the 930 Club, which at the time were just around the corner. It was about two blocks away. Like, if you timed it right, you could watch one set at the 930 Club and rush over to DC Space and see somebody else. But
yeah, and there was that weird park.
Yeah.
It was sort of
just bizarre. Four adult video stores and a park that you kind of cut through to get there.
Yeah, yeah. And wasn't there a wig shop?
There was.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And then, like, the original Whitlow's around the corner. And other than that, everything was boarded up, man. Or the iron gates were pulled down at night.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Man, that's like another, a whole nother time.
Yeah, it is.
So, anyway, thank you guys both so much
for
indulging me in Hardcore Week.
This is
great. Know it was a bit of a slog at points, but I really had a great time.
Me
and,
too.
And you guys, you know, you guys do such a great job with the podcast, and I always enjoy listening, even if it's something where I'm like, I'm not sure that I would necessarily relate to that. It's always entertaining.
Well,
and,
thank you.
And it's always interesting, and I've discovered a lot of great new music that way.
Good.
So right. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Oh, thank you for putting this all together.
Yeah, this is putting up with us. It's fantastic.
This is amazing.
This really is. It is.
How much work you put into
this,
right?
It's Galera-like. It's up there, man. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Imagine if I had put that amount of work into going to college, where I would be right now.
I think you're doing okay.
Yeah. That's a line I hear at my house. If you put as much work into that podcast, into X, as you do into that podcast.
Yeah. My wife's just happy to have me out of the house. It's all good. All right. So here's what I want to do to play out. We haven't really done different play out songs this week. So we should feature Dot Dash, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Especially now we're talking about great DC bands.
Totally.
Is there a particular Dot Dash song that you would consider to be the most hardcore?
Yeah, there is. Can you pull up the record? It's the one with Rain on the cover. It's the third record.
Okay.
And it has, the song A Light in a Distance.
Okay.
That song is sort of the most hardcore of songs that we have. And there is Bill Crandall, our first guitar player, plays a riff on there that I always thought of as like a Rick Agnew from the Adolescence riff.
Oh, okay.
And I said to Bill, Bill did not like hardcore punk at all, or I don't know that he didn't like it, he just didn't know it. I was like, Bill, man, you should play that riff that sounds like Rick Agnew. And he looked at me like, what are you talking about?
I'm never playing that again.
Yeah, I always thought it sounded like Rick Agnew.
Got it.
And so, yeah, I think this is our most hardcore song, and I really like it.
All right.
All right, what is the song called again?
A Light in the Distance.
All right. It's from our third LP, which is called Half Remembered Dream, mm-hmm. which is actually my favorite Dot Dash record.
Oh, cool. So people should check out Dot Dash.
It's all here on the streamings, people, and you can get it on Bandcamp as well.
There you go. So do that. And it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us
is Hunter Bennett.
Thanks very much, Hunter.
Thank you so much.
It's been fantastic. All right,
awesome.
Here's Dot Dash, and we'll talk to you guys later.
I saw love.
want to give too much away here, but right. earlier in the week we were talking about the preparation of notes for the show mm-hmm. and how we prepare and things like that. And you said that as the week went on, your notes became sort of more sparse.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
These are the kind of notes that I have when we do a show where it's just stuff, yeah. where it's just little bullet points like this that yeah. I'll have on my computer. You know, might be the best drummer ever saw, yeah. stuff like that, right?